This episode of Comics Coast to Coast is brought to you by patrons like you. If you'd like to help out with the show, head on over to patreon.com/comicsc2c and give us a little bit of your love, your sweet, sweet lovin'. Did I just make this weird?
This is Comics Coast to Coast.
Everybody, this is Brian Dunaway, and you're listening to Comics Coast to Coast, episode 264, The Seven Deadly Sins of Webcomicking, sirs. Or, How I Forgot to Clear My Browser Cache. All right, so, with us tonight is Joel Duggan of Starcrossed Online. Joel!
That's me. Don't wear me out.
Don't wear me out. I don't think you got that right, or maybe you got it oh so right. Oh, so right. I like it. Already starting with the sin. Got me in my lustful nature. Thanks a lot, Joel. How are things going?
I do what I can to pave the yellow brick road. What's that?
Right, how's it been going, man? You're up there in Canada and the winds are blowing?
Busy. And I wish I was busier with client work, but I'm taking an opportunity kind of in between clients to catch up on things like the web comic that I draw.
Very good. Because we're going to talk about webcomics, The Seven Deadly Sins tonight. Thanks to Matthew Ducharme. Matt, how are you?
Doing just dandy.
Matthew Ducharme came up with this topic on the fly earlier this week. We were like, hey, no guests this week. We want to do a producer show. He's like, sure. And Matt was like, hey, we should do one on Seven Deadly Sins of Webcomics. And I was like, ooh, interesting. And then Joel was like, I want to do My Little Ponies. And I was like, shut up, man. Shut up. We're doing Seven Deadly Sins. Whatever, My Little Pony freak. All right, so yes, so Matt, how are you, brother?
Doing just dandy, sir.
Good. Before we get too far into this show, Joel, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you know who our next guest is? Because we have a guest next week, right? I mean, it's okay if you don't know.
No, I absolutely know, and some of our listeners will probably know Brad Geiger from all kinds of things that he does in webcomics. We just got a confirmation from Brad 2 days ago that he's going to be able to come on the show next week, March 3rd.
Oh, that's great. It's going to be
fun. We have quite a few guests lined up. And stay tuned. We'll kind of bleed those out as we get more confirmation.
Absolutely. Well, you know how it is. Every January and February is always tough here on Comics Coast to Coast. Same as December. December, January, and part of February is just... it's just a no-fly zone for cartoonists. It's really hard for them to get their act together during that time.
Well, I've got a small theory as to why it's hard. It is try hard time for a lot of folks because it's pre-con season.
Right.
It is tax season, and anybody that's an independent artist of any kind is basically in small business hell for the next month and a half.
Right.
and then on top of that, it's also really dry season for usual client work. So I feel like a lot of webcomic artists that are kind of independent and freelancers are just really focusing all their time on finding work and doing the next freelance contract. So it is kind of difficult to nail people down for podcast dates, but we do have a few.
You know, in past years, we would have just said, hey guys, we don't have a guest. We should just take a break this week. And we do that for a couple of weeks, or as we like to call it in the webcomic industry, a hiatus. And but now we have these wonderful listeners who are also patrons, and we have people who support the show, and now we feel like people are really listening, and now I feel like guilty when I go, nah, let's just take it off. Let's take a break. Now I feel guilty. So it's actually a good thing. It's very motivating. Patreon has really, I think, it lit a fire under my butt, at least anyway, and it really helps. It's not, you know, it's not like we're making $1 million or anything, but enough to cover some of the hosting costs. That just like, that makes it so much easier and better. It makes me happy.
And it's surprised how quickly hosting costs for a podcast and a website will add up. Like, if you're anything like you and I, where you've got multiple websites, multiple domains, you start adding all that kind of stuff together, and it's no longer pocket change after you're on a couple of podcasts and you've got your own website and that sort of thing.
Well, okay, I got to tell you guys something too. By the way, there's a little business before we get on to the Seven Deadly Sins of webcomics,
sure,
which I can't wait to talk about. But we were with HostGator, and I'm not going to poo-poo on them because they were my hosting provider for a really long time. But they changed the hands last year, and things have kind of went south. And I'm sure there's some restructuring. They seem to be trying, but I don't have time for them to, you know, get back to where they was at. I'm sorry. So I was we were contacted by somebody who had heard about our little issues, and it's called cutalltheshit.com. Bleep. That's not a bad word anymore, is it? You can say the S word now, right? I don't think it's not even a word anymore. So anyway, yeah, so they contacted me, and I was like, okay, I'll try it out. So I hopped on their website, and it was snappy, and there really was not a bunch of junk, and it was just as advertised. And when I got on there, there was immediately a person that was in a chat room all the time, and was like, hey, man, if you need any help, just let me know. And I felt very at home. And so I was like, okay. And so we're migrating there now. So I test it for a month just on my own personal stuff, and it seems to all be running very good or well, and I like it. And so Comics Coast to Coast is about to migrate. So if for any reason the show had trouble finding you for like a day or something, it's because we were migrating. But hopefully our uptime will be a lot better now, because I'm telling you, the last couple of months and HostGator has been really slow with stuff. And like I said, I don't want to poo-poo on them, because, you know, as a company, they've done us pretty good. You know, they've been fair, reasonable, and it's just time for us to move on. Move on. And speaking of moving on, we're about to get to the topic of 7 deadly sins of webcomics. And as soon as Matthew Ducharme said that to me, I said, you know what? That sounds like an article that has already been written. And so I was a little bit nervous about that. So I hopped on the Google, and I typed in 7 deadly sins of webcomics. And sure enough, there was an article written back in 2007. So I was like, 2007, it's time to revisit this a little bit. And so we're going to talk about it. But the review I saw from 2007, I sent to you guys, and it was a little bit...
It was harsh.
It was a negative, very negative.
negative, yeah. Is an understatement.
A little negative. But if you know anything about... I had kind of forgotten about this, but there was... I didn't even realize where I was at when I was looking at it, but there was a blogger back in 2007, 2008, that really went after webcomics in a real critical fashion. I mean, not like a critique fashion where it's like, hey, here's some good pointers. More like, you suck, and this is why. And so that's kind of how this article kind of reads. And there's some valid points, but there's also a lot of venom.
Yeah, there's that element that you see a lot from like teenagers.
Right.
When they get old enough and they start tearing everything apart that they look at because they think it qualifies as intelligence.
Right. Well, like, I don't think the reviewer was unintelligent. I think he's just very venomous. And
no, but there was that quality to it.
Right.
The joy of tearing something apart, like, see, mm-hmm. see, look what I can do.
Yeah,
And to make sure that we're on the same page here, Brian, this article that you linked, it's written by a woman.
Oh, maybe this is not the same. Well, hold on a second. I'm looking over here.
Lilith Esker.
Did somebody steal this?
Because I don't know. The link that you sent me is got a credit by a lady.
Okay, so all right. So back in the day, it was badwebcomic.blogspot.ca. And from my understanding, this blog was written anonymously, basically, by a author. And so I don't know if since then they've attributed it to this.
No, are we talking about a different article?
I think what's going on, I think what you're seeing is that written? Oh, I don't know. This article is, that's not the writer, I don't think. I think that might be the artist behind the comic. Oh, is that right?
It says written by Lilith Esker.
Here, let me look this up. Let me look it up. I did it wrong. I'll send you a new link.
I'm on the website now.
I know you're on the website, but this is not how it looked to me earlier. It looked different, and it didn't have a name, and it had lots of comments.
Yeah, I think you're talking about a different blog, maybe.
Joe. talking about a different blog, you butthole.
So now we're podcasting with Gomer Pyle. This is going to be fun.
Golly! All right. All right. So anyway, regardless of who wrote it.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's not super important.
Right. It's not super important. But it's like I said, it's kind of like what you said before the show, and I'll clue people in on that. Joel and Matt both got to go see Deadpool this week. I haven't seen it yet, so no spoilers, please. But they did give me, Joel mentioned something, and it kind of reminded me of this article, and he said that, you know, there's a lot of creative ways to say dirty things in this movie, right? Because yes, there's true. So much that's part of the Deadpool character, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's just he's so insulting and he's so filthy all the time that if he just said your generic insults, it would get boring in 5 minutes.
Right. So he has
get very creative.
Right. And that's kind of how this feels. This blog, if you read through the blog and different mm-hmm. articles, it's kind of the same thing. It's like you don't think there's an unintelligent person writing it. You just think there's somebody who is very venomous. Maybe this was Deadpool. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
the way that I read this article, the one from 2007, is this particular person had some web comics that really rubbed them the wrong way.
Right.
And so they took those things that bothered them and fit them into the seven deadly sins. It's not so much that it was the seven deadly sins of web comics. It was more like the seven deadly sins of these web comics that really pissed me off. Right. Like it felt very focused, right? Like when you get down to author. The who wrote the author in the beginning, like it wasn't at all. It was just meant to tear someone down or multiple people down. It wasn't meant to say, hey, here's something that I've observed that's wrong with web comics in general. You should perhaps steer away from these things. It was more, no, this person is doing one of these things and therefore they are death on a stick and they should be drugged into the street and shot and chopped in little pieces and mailed to Abu Dhabi. Like,
death on a stick.
Right. The first one, the first deadly sin that was addressed in this blog post back in 2007, by the way, I thought it was interesting to talk about how things have changed and haven't changed over the years. They've changed a lot in the webcomic industry, so are our complaints still the same? I don't know. That's what we're about to find out, if we think those things still hold true. The first one is lust. And the author talks about using sex as a selling point for your comic and using exaggerated proportions and basically just writing to the lowest common denominator of what they kind of perceive as the lowest common denominator, which is just, you know, a youthful, lustful mind of non-intelligence.
See, I don't think there's anything wrong with that as long as you're upfront that that's what you're shooting for.
Right.
You know, if you make it clear that, yeah, we're just gunning for inappropriate here.
Right. We're doing this thing right now. And you know what? I think it's even more important than that. I don't have a problem with that part of it. I have a problem with not being good quality work. And that goes from writing, art, any of it. By the way, we're not going to mention, unlike this article, we're not going to name any names on this show because, you know what? I think it takes so much from any creator to put their content out there on the internet and to be judged. And I'm not going to call out any particular person while we're doing this. But I will say that I think lust, the display of sexuality, I think, or how about gratuitous sexuality, has become more of a talking point in webcomics in the last couple of years, I think. And it's partially because we're going through a sexual exploration time here, especially in the U.S., where we're kind of exploring our sexuality a little bit. And so we're talking about relationships that may not be the norm or what used to be the norm. And so I think you're seeing that addressed in more popular webcomics than you would have back in 2007. I think a lot of the webcomics back then were probably just flat out anime kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like that oversexed, directed, pointed at 13-year-olds.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like I even have that issue with trying to watch anime on Netflix. It's like I live by myself, yet when I go to watch anime on Netflix, like I won't click on ones, even if it sounds like it's a good story. If it's got like some big shiny boobed bikini wearing warrior on the poster art, I don't want that to come up as recently watched by Joel. Like because people that don't know what the anime is are gonna be like, well, Joel's watching anime porn. That's good.
It's funny.
But it's so frequent, right? Because and if I do get into an anime, a really good one that was an example is Witchblade, because I read the comic when I was a teenager and I thought, oh, cool, they've made an animated show out of Witchblade. That's probably pretty good. Okay, and it is, it's borderline porn. Like it's really, really gratuitous. Right. And I'm like, it's a cartoon and I'm uncomfortable watching it. So like,
you don't remember Michael Turner's comic? I mean, it was pretty risky.
I do, but it's different. It's different when it's moving.
Right.
It's different when it's moving. And you got to remember, like, the way that anime is shot, there's a lot of very slow holds.
Right.
And stuff. And you're just like, nope. No. This is just way too much information.
Now I got to watch it.
Yeah. Don't make sure your kids aren't around.
They know I watch porn. No, I'm just kidding. I don't do that. But yeah, okay. So it sounds like to me, lust is still a deadly sin, possibly, if not treated or handled with care, which is kind of what the article says, too. You know, even back in 2007, same thing. It's like, you know, it's just an easy crutch. Don't do it. Don't do it. What do you think, Matt?
I interpreted it on my side when I was making my list of seven deadly sins as wanting to be like another comic so badly that you kind of end up imitating it.
Ah. Would that be... Oh.
Yeah, so that was my interpretation.
So they want to have relations with the other comic.
No, you love someone's... Someone else's comic so much that you kind of unintentionally
push it
remake
away.
It.
Is that right?
That you kind of remake it.
Remake it. I got you. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm down with that. So let's name some examples. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But I mean, and I think that's like, it's a perfect example of what we're trying to illustrate with this older article and why it's so off base is that Matt has what is probably a more adept interpretation of lust, whereas the calling out of basically people drawing big boob bimbos in their comic under lust in the article is basically them fitting the fact that they don't like big boob bimbos in comics into the lust category for the seven deadly sins.
Right.
Like it's forced. It doesn't really, they're not looking at lust as a broader term as far as web comics go. It's not, you know, whereas Matt, the way that you described it is. You know, I mean, I think too that as far as art and not so much copying, but being influenced by other artists, while it's good to learn and good to, you know, have a number of influences, and I've had people call me out for influences in my work, which I find flattering, but usually because they're saying like, well, I get a little bit of this and a little bit of that from your work, which is nice. Like it's always a nice compliment. But if someone says, hey, you're copying, I don't know, Watterson or something like that, then I mean, it's almost like an insult.
Right.
Right. They're not giving it, they're not saying that to you as a compliment. They're saying like, wow, you're copying, you know, this artist here.
Right. Right.
I think the hard part with lust and webcomics is there's just so much out there that if you don't do your research, if you think you've got a webcomic that's on your list of like, wow, maybe this guy really or this girl really is copying another comic, sometimes these two comics have no idea that the other one exists.
Right.
You know, there's just so much content out there. Like, I don't know if I've ever repeated a joke, but I'm sure that I've written a version of a joke where I know I didn't come up with it. Like it's funny because it's my own characters that are doing it, but I know that somehow in the amount of stuff that we've just are exposed to these days on the internet, that it's just buried in the back of my brain somewhere. So like, it's impossible to come up with anything.
I call it the
brand new, yeah. You know,
isn't that called the Ziggy? Isn't that what they, when that, the Seinfeld episode where Elaine was convinced that, was it George that wrote a Ziggy?
I don't know. I don't watch Seinfeld. So
you don't watch Seinfeld? Oh, my God. So stop watching Witchblade.
I don't watch that either.
Crazy man. Go watch some Seinfeld.
Can't stand Seinfeld.
All right.
What's next on our list?
I think we've done lust enough. All right. So gluttony is the next one. All right. Gluttony in this article talks about, look at me, everyone. I do a web comic. So talk about yourself too much, I think is what you're saying here. Shamelessly promotes themselves in the gluttony of webcomic. And so this is obviously from a consumer standpoint going, oh, look at this web cartoonist. He won't shut up about his work. And you know what? I don't get that one, because if you're making something, if you're a cartoonist and you're a web cartoonist, I expect you to talk 90% of your time about the thing you love, which is web comics, making comics, doing something with comics. It doesn't bother me.
My interpretation of gluttony in this case was that you're too busy being a consumer to be a creator.
Right.
You're too busy reading other web comics or watching TV shows or movies or whatever that you're not creating, you're consuming.
Right. So gluttony is of consumption is a death knell. Instead of consuming, you need to be creating, right?
Yeah,
and that's how I looked at it.
And I think a lot of people would probably say that. Myself, I can say from experience, once I started creating a webcomic, I had very little time to read one.
Yeah, that's always a tough question.
I had 15 or 20 webcomics I would read on a regular basis, depending on how often they were published. And now that I've been making one for a while, I don't really read any outside of what we read for the show for interview purposes. Or I'll binge and I'll be like, oh, I haven't caught up with, you know, insert comic here that I really like. And then Girls with Slingshots was a really good example. I ended up treating that more like Netflix as her stories got longer. I would just not read it for months. And then I would, so I'd catch a tweet or I'd whatever. And then I would go back and I would read everything. And I would always want to be caught up, but I would hate knowing that it's like a 20 comic arc and I'm reading, you know, three. Right. And it was like, okay, I need to know how this ends. Whereas it was a better experience for me to go back and binge read. And I think that's probably true of a lot of people when they start creating a comic, that it's hard to keep up on ones that you're reading.
As a creator, and especially as creators of a podcast about webcomics, we see so many webcomics. It's hard for me to narrow down what I want to consume when it's not relevant to the show. Whereas, you know, back in 2004, before I started this show, I was more like, hey, I'd like to see a comic about the tech industry. So I would Google that, and then I would read comics about that area. And that's not how I do it anymore, man. That's not how I do it.
So we got gluttony, we got lust. What's next?
Gluttony, lust, and then we've got greed by this article. Once again, I'll remind you, from 2007 by author Joel, says the girl. And let's see, greed, insane donation runs. So they're talking about, you know, those when artists used to, back in 2007, they would have like a marathon donation kind of run thing where it's like, hey, we need money. And you'd have those little, you have a little thermometer on the side of the screen that kind of showed how much money you were collecting.
And wow, I totally don't remember this.
You don't remember
stage of
that time? Oh man, it was great.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah. I remember all that, because I launched StarCrossed around the same time that all that kind of stuff went away.
Right, right. And he's like, wait, I need money. Where are you guys going? Come back.
I did have a tip jar button when I first launched, but after that, I quickly moved away from it. I think that this, I mean, to bring it up to speed these days, I think it could be over-plugging things like Patreon, Kickstarter, because we didn't have those tools back when this article was written.
Right.
And I don't know, it's hard. Like at one point, you always want to mention things because you want to thank the patrons that help make the comic possible, but you also want to promote the fact that there is a Patreon. And I don't know, I feel like
most people I hear from, especially when it comes to podcasts, a little bit different of podcast, but most time I hear it, they prefer an organic ad. So if you're, you know, if you're doing the show, they would prefer you to not suddenly drop out of the show and talk about middle of greed or whatever, middle of talking about that and, you know, start plugging your Patreon, Kickstarter stuff. They want it to be naturally organic. They don't want it to make you feel weird or whatever. And I'm with them. I don't think there's anything wrong with greed. And I don't think this article says that there's really anything wrong with greed other than people who make their website too focused on the passing of the plate. It's like, here, put some money in this. Hey, you can't look at the comic. Look, stop. Look at me. Look at me.
Yeah.
This one was a tough one on my end because it's very hard for anyone to even make money in this business. So for me, I was interpreting it as, you know, there's some of those people who just have their website just plastered full of ads.
Right.
I think, you know, you just have that one banner or something. But beyond that, if you want to expand the definition to not just webcomic artists, but like content creators, there's the good example of that. I'm going to draw a blank on the name, but the YouTube channel with the reaction videos. You've guys seen this?
Yeah.
Where they tried to somehow copyright the idea of reaction videos.
Yeah.
And there was this huge backlash.
It's a little tongue-in-cheek, but it was a little bit too real.
I think the thing is, if you're doing well, don't suddenly try to do like super well, regardless of like whatever everyone else is. You know, like it's good to be successful. Don't like push it in everyone's face, I would say, maybe.
Yeah. I think too that there's an extreme situation where I've never actually witnessed it myself. I've only heard about it, where people take a webcomic and then they put it behind a paywall. You know, like an imaginary example would be, hey, I can't draw my comic anymore. I'm not making enough money. So I'm putting up a Patreon, but only when I hit $200 a comic will I start publishing again.
Yeah, that's like dealing. I don't like.
Yeah. You're using the tools incorrectly. And yeah. And you're also misunderstanding the nature of the economy that you're in. It's an established thing. You know, webcomics have been around for long enough that this is the world that you're in. If you want to draw a comic where people have to pay you first, make a book.
Right. Or right? How about like this? If you don't enjoy making comics, unless it can pay for your living, maybe you should do something else. I mean, it's great to get paid for the thing you love, but you certainly can't take your ball and go, well, you know what, guys, just not getting enough support here, and unless you guys can come up with some money, I'm out of here. That's not cool.
Another example in just the content creation category is freebooters. Just occurred to me right now. The people who steal original videos and then post them on Facebook as their own.
Right.
Yeah.
Jerks.
It's funny, you know. I had a really good example of this on the Citadel Cafe 2 weeks ago. There was a sculpture video, and I'm struggling to remember the guy's name right now. I'm going to look it up while I'm chatting. It was on a Facebook website called Sith TV, nothing to do with Star Wars. It was just the name of the channel. Right. And they had this time-lapse video, which was about 7 minutes, of this guy making an incredible sculpture of Conan. And the thing was about the size of those old oversized G.I. Joe, like about 12 inches tall, give or take.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I
know right? what you're talking about. And yeah. It was an amazing time lapse, but they didn't make the video. They didn't credit the video.
Right.
Because they sped it up, the guy's little punch at the beginning was lost or was up for so short that it didn't really read well. So it took me forever to track down the proper name for the person. The artist's name is Alberto Carrera. You can't really understand his video because it's all in Spanish. And it's not time-lapse.
You,
like,
you
he
could
has,
if you were Spanish.
Well, second language in Canada is French, Brian.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Deal with it.
All right. Okay.
But his video is not time-lapse. So they took his video, they time-lapsed it, and then they threw it up on Facebook with zero credit to him, like nothing, not even a comment. They just kind of posted the video as if to say, this is where we post cool stuff. Here's a cool thing.
Right.
And I mean, I gave him proper credit in the show notes for the Citadel Cafe because, I mean, the work that he does is beautiful. I wish I knew Spanish because I want to learn how to do what he does. Because it sounds like he's giving tips and instruction as he's going about these videos.
Right.
But like that's a perfect example of stuff like that. And I find that infuriating. I mean, you see it a lot too with creators' names and stuff being stripped off of fan art. You know, people just like Sailor Moon, so they post some image of Sailor Moon, but then they've cropped off the artist credit or the artist website or something.
They're going to go through effort. I mean, if they go through effort, I'm like, I have no sympathy for you. And if you just post a Sailor Moon thing, you're like, hey, this is cool, and you put zero effort into it, you know, I'm like, eh, whatever. But yeah, if you go through the trouble of cropping something, That's asinine.
Yes.
It's the intent behind it. It's clear that someone's being scummy enough to try to pass off someone else's hard work as their own.
Right.
You know, no one likes that.
No one except for Slaws.
Who's that? Our next one?
That's our next one. Slaws are slow. They're really slow. You ever seen watch videos of those guys? They're just ridiculously.
So what does the blogger say about the sin of sloth?
Now, this was a big thing in 2007. Some artists were trying to streamline their process, so there was some copying and pasting going on. What's that you say? Copy and pasting from frame to frame. That was just kind of the name of the game sometimes when you're trying to get out a comic unrealistically 5 days a week. And some people, I don't think anyone intentionally said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do the least imaginable. When people are creating content, that's not what
I'm going to argue with you there.
Are you going to argue that?
There's
with
a
me?
Lot of people out there that are going to do the least amount of work possible.
Oh, well, I'm not saying that they are not going to do the least amount of work possible. I'm just saying that I wouldn't necessarily call that slothily. I mean, not publishing a comic at all when you have a great idea for one. Now, that'd be a sloth.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of web comics out there that went this route on purpose.
Right. I mean, it
which is fine. If that's what you like to read, then power to you.
Right. And once again, that it may be just the fact that they're and if it was successful, if it's a copy paste comic and it's successful, then it's probably going to be good writing because it's not going to be successful just from copying and pasting. No one's going to sit there and look at the same image over and over again unless there's some funny writing in it.
And to be clear, I'm not talking about something that's lightboarded or copy and pasted for the sake of the gag.
Right.
I've done that for the sake of making something funnier. I've read articles where Frank Cho has talked about when he was drawing Liberty Meadows and then using a lightboard to make sure that the character that was staying in a state of catatonic shock was in precisely the same position every time. But he wanted to have an original piece of art. Like he wanted to have a strip that had the character drawn four times. So he used a lightboard to make sure that it was the same. That's different.
Yeah, I agree. Much different. Matt, tell us what's your sloth.
Well, my interpretation of it is I thought this was personally one of the worst because I thought of it as being too lazy to work on your comic consistently.
Oh.
And I'm definitely, even though I don't technically do a comic, I still create something, and this is a tough one. It's tough sometimes to find that energy on top of everything else to keep making what you're making.
Right.
So it's a tricky one. It's a hard one to get past, but that's how I interpret it.
I think sloth is the number one of the deadly sins because that's the thing that will kill your comic. I mean, you have to be consistent, and it doesn't matter. We tried to figure out the formula for years and years until it just finally just it became it showed itself organically. I've said organic a couple of times this episode. I don't know why. I think I got some organic food in the refrigerator and it's just messing with me. All right, so I think it doesn't matter how often you update as long as you're consistent. Now, I'm not saying like once a year, but you know, like if you update 3 times a week versus 2 times a week or even 1 time a week, I think as long as you're consistent and don't fall out of your dedicated pattern like Matt was talking about, I think that's what he's trying to say. Being regular, is that the slothiness, non-slothiness?
Yeah, just kind of keeping up with it, not right. letting too much time pass
right
between uploads or updates.
Updates. Joel, what do you think about slothies?
Well, I mean, it's absolutely true. I mean, you talk about the number one way for your webcomic to kind of fall off in readership and awareness, you know, just in terms of clout is, you know, mind share for people that do read webcomics. I mean, being consistent up there is certainly, I would say, forefront. And I say that coming from experiencing it. I mean, like, I have not been able to keep StarCrossed up to date. And I've noticed a huge drop off in readership and book sales and commissions and all of it.
Right. How important are the numbers? I mean, financially.
Which what numbers?
The numbers, the people, the drop off. The drop off. Does it bother you that fewer people are reading?
No, it's the hard part about it for me, and I'm a very niche case in that I magically have a very small but dedicated following.
Right.
So like I posted a rough tease of a new StarCross comic that I'm working on that's going to go up on Monday on Instagram. And I mean, like, my phone lit up for a half an hour after I posted this one little sketch because there's lots of people that are fans saying, "Ooh, I like this. I like that more's coming." So while my website traffic is low, and it will go up when a new comic is posted, I notice the trickle-down effect in other things. I mean, I still get some commissions, but not nearly the kind of commission requests that I get when I'm posting StarCross at a regular basis. And I would say that the bigger kind of hurt on my end is that I get asked a lot about book two, right. which doesn't happen unless I've been able to draw enough comics to fill a book.
Right.
And that takes a hell of a lot longer when you're down to like 1 or 2 comics a month versus 4 comics a month, right? So my first book took me like 2.5 years or something to make. So if I had kept on that path, my next book would have come out a year and a half ago, right?
Right.
But it, I mean, I might be able to get a new book out this year. But like, you know, and it's going to be a smaller book than the first one. So I mean, that's the kind of thing where you end up hurting yourself long term by kind of falling off. And I'm not saying, like, I understand that there's a lot of reasons, you know, like there can be personal, professional, there can be work-related, time-related, people can move, you know, like if you're married to somebody in the military and you're constantly all over the place, well, I mean, that can affect things. So like, that's different than being lazy, having the time and not doing it versus,
right.
you know, having things that are in the way.
So do you guys think I've been thinking about this for the last couple of weeks, maybe even longer. Do you guys think that the popularity in the webcomic community as creators, do you think that the desire to publish a weekly or more webcomic has kind of, you know, is kind of lessened a little bit? Are people kind of heading more towards, hey, you know what, I'm going to create some content and I'm going to make more of it and I'm going to release it less. So I'm going to make a book. Do you think people are artists are kind of heading in that direction instead of wanting to pursue that weekly drive that you have to do for making that content, or you guys haven't seen it at all?
I haven't seen new webcomics in a while. I mean, I confessed earlier that I don't read very much right. anymore, but I, I think we're also at a saturated market. There's a really, really good conversation about this on Surviving Creativity. I don't remember the episode, but it was 2016. So it's within the last 6 weeks or so. And they were talking about predictions for not just webcomics, but just creative content in general, independent creators. And Corey Cassoni and Scott Kurtz both had two kind of separate predictions. One was that the cream is going to rise to the top. There's just so many people out there creating stuff that this year, 2016, you're going to see the people that are really doing good content rise, and the people that are just kind of half-assing it are going to fall. There's so many demands for consumers, dollar a month or eyeballs or clicks or whatever, likes on Facebook, that people just only have so much bandwidth as consumers. So you're going to see them gravitate to the handful of people that are just really doing good things. And then the other prediction was that the people that are finding it financially difficult to keep up creatively with what they're doing, you're going to see a divide. You're going to see 2015 was hard. 2016 is going to be harder. And you're going to see people that are not cutting it quit. And it was an interesting kind of conversation. They go into much more detail about it. It's really worth listening to. Incidentally, that's also Brad Geiger is the other host on that show. So it's fitting that it came up
again next week.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll mention it next week. But yeah, it's really worth listening to the conversation that kind of evolved from those predictions, because it's true. And as a creator, scary as hell.
Yeah. So, Mr. Dunaway, what's next on our blogger's list?
Is Wrath, a.k.a. used to be a lot worse than it is now. Back in 2007, Wrath seemed to be a little more common. Artist butting heads. You know, one cartoonist calling the other a hack. And it seemed to be a much more volatile time to me. I don't know if, once again, if it's because I'm not having as much exposure to webcomics as I once was, or if it just doesn't seem to be as big as it was. It seems like there used to be a lot of big fights between the big cartoonists, and it doesn't seem to be there anymore.
Yeah, I think a lot of that back then was twofold. One, it was the battle for webcomics in general to be taken seriously.
Right.
By comics as kind of a whole industry. And then because it was a fledgling industry, and because a lot of people were very passionate about it and knew that they were on the top of the ladder as this thing was being built underneath them, kicking the guy off the ladder next to you was just kind of this natural competitive thing that happened. Right. I'm not saying it was right, but I definitely remember listening to podcasts, reading comment threads and stuff back in like 2008, 2010 that were a lot more, oh my God, I can't believe this guy did this and blah, 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 blah. This isn't the way things are. But now I feel like things have gone a lot more even in that if you're making content and you're entertaining an audience, well, whatever. Like if you're doing good stuff there's our people out there that enjoy your stuff, then people just tend to leave one another well alone.
Right.
You know, I think people just realize now that it's more important to put your efforts into making the thing as opposed to bashing the thing next to you.
Right.
Totally. Yeah, this was where I think I agreed the closest with the blogger. I had Wrath as basically trash-talking other creators. And I think the problem with it is that it is such a kind of small community, and we all kind of, in a way, need each other, that if you start coming across as a jerk, you know, it gets around quick and doesn't help anyone, doesn't help you, makes you look unprofessional and insecure. You know, it's no one needs that. So
just an interesting note, Twitter launched in 2006 and this article was written in 2007.
Right.
It kind of makes you wonder, like if you're going to, like, for example, maybe there's a comic person that's being really offensive. They're making a comic that you really don't like, so you decide to trash talk them. But now what you have is the tools available online for their army of fans, because there are going to be fans that love their thing, to come down on you like a buzzard on a gut wagon.
Right.
Right. Where that wasn't quite as prevalent back then. Like, you could go on a forum and, you know, cause some crap, and congratulations, you pissed off 230 people, like whoop-de-doo. Right. But now that could be 230,000 people, depending on who the artist is. Right.
Thank God. I mean, so you're saying Twitter has turned into forums? Oh my God, no. Please.
not so much, not Twitter specifically, but social media at large has just connected the planet in a numbers game that is just, everybody is walking on eggshells.
True story. I think that's probably a topic on its own. We could probably have a freaking hour long conversation on that.
Oh man. I mean, I would love to talk to somebody in PR, you know, at any kind of media company, you know, because ultimately stuff is going to go sideways somewhere is about something, you know?
Oh yeah. Totally. Now, our next in the list is envy. The blogger talks about envy as being something of almost like a fishing for compliments. So this person says that envy would be, telling someone how envious you are of their work and hoping in hopes that you would get reciprocation of some sort, I suppose. What is your envy definition? Mr.
See, I think my definition of it, I think, is probably more destructive and insidious because in mine, it's comparing your level of success with comics that have been around for years and accumulated massive fan bases. Right. I think if you are going to compare your success to something, compare it to your own past success. Unless you're looking at someone who's, one of the big guys and you're saying, all right, that's my goal, that's okay. But what I'm talking about is when you look at like where that guy is and you say, wow, how can I ever get there?
Right. Man, it'll destroy you in a second. Kills you. Kills me all the time. I'm like, look at these crazy talented people and they're only 12. All right, last one.
Yeah, we've interviewed a few of those.
Right? Come on.
Yeah. I actually get a kick out of interviewing people that are just stupidly talented at a very young age.
I love it.
Yeah.
I see it like, why wouldn't I want to be in that position in their age? So it's like, yeah, bravo. Mm-hmm. Good on you.
Good on you. All right. And our last sin of the deadly sort is going to be pride. And the once again, back to the article. So I guess to kind of constantly talk about yourself, maybe. And so never adding any type of new content, maybe. Let's see. I didn't feel like this one was a very strong point, so.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of sort of agreed with the blogger on this one, too. But I think, for me, again, this one's sort of insidious. And you see this in a lot of beginning webcomic artists. Like, oh, my thing is awesome and you all need to know how awesome it is. Come look at my awesome thing that I made. I worked so hard on it. It deserves to be awesome to everyone else.
I don't know if our whole culture right now is very big, especially in America, on pride. I don't hear a lot of people being boastful and prideful very often. And unless you're kind of doing it like in a kind of a sneaky way, kind of like trying to get that compliment or something. But
see, I'm just talking about like over-promoting.
Over-promoting,
how you go to a lot of forums, it's just people plugging their stuff.
I gotcha. Yes.
And you can tell like I often visualize forums like this as like a whole bunch of people just shouting all at the same time. Look at me, look at me. But no one's actually looking at anyone else.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, the sad thing is that's like the first thing that you usually hear from creators to new people who are getting into the field. They go, oh, you know, you got to promote yourself. And the first question they ask is, how am I supposed to do that? I have like 2 followers on Twitter. And you go, oh, then just go to the forums of topics about your comic and kind of pimp it there. But you got to get to know people. You got to be part of the community first. You can't just run in, throw your shit down, and run out. You got to be part of the community.
And it's really hard to balance, too, because no one's going to find your comic unless you tell them about it.
Right.
So you have to work it into a conversation somehow. Like, I think that's the trick too, is like, you know, in situations, I don't know, not in forums very much, but in common threads on say like DeviantArt or something like that. I mean, I'm on DeviantArt, so people know I'm an artist, but there's a lot of stuff up there that isn't my webcomic. So unless it comes up in the conversation or people say like, oh, well, that's an interesting way to ink. Like, you know, do you handle it that way? And I can say, well, you know, here's an example of how I handle it. So if it's topical, it works. But like commenting on someone's strip and saying, hey, like, I really like your spot blacks. What do you think of mine? You know, like that's crossing the pride line, maybe.
Right. Yeah, it is. You know, it's very tough. I mean,
yeah.
And it's something that the internet at large, and I think people at large, don't have much tolerance for, but definitely on the internet. As soon as you can tell someone's in it all for themselves, it turns off.
Yeah.
That section of your brain just says, all right, this is someone who doesn't care about anything outside of his own sphere. Time to move on to the next thing. And it is tricky because, you do want to promote. But at the same time, you don't want people to think that, like, you know, ultimately you need to, or I always try to remind myself that, like, no one else is going to find my work as interesting as I do.
Yeah. there's a really good example for this. I'll leave names out of it, but there was an illustrator that I was following, and they were doing a lot of article writing, and a lot of it was really cool tools and tips and stuff like that. But somewhere along the way, it turned into advertisements for their own services, their own consulting, their own classes, their own stuff. And every article would end up being like, all roads lead to, you should just sign up for my $300 course. Right. And so I unfollowed them. I stopped following them on Twitter. I unsubscribed from the newsletter. And the newsletter had good content in amongst all this, but that stuff was just all too frequent.
Right.
And it would have really kind of misleading headlines, like, here's the kind of stuff that I do when I'm in my downtime to make some extra money. And all it is basically saying, it's like those make money from home schemes where the way that you make money from home is to sell other people opportunities to make money from home.
Right.
You know, and I think getting to be a whole lot less tolerance for clickbait too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Totally. But then the reverse is the website. What's it called? Elegant Themes. Oh, yeah, so nice. I have a list of articles from those guys that are piling up in my inbox that I can't wait to read because they're doing content marketing. Like, yeah, they make WordPress themes. They're very good at it. I use them, but I get so much value out of being on their newsletter that the odd time, like once a quarter, when they send, oh, hey, we've got a new theme coming out and here's some cool ways that you might want to use it, that I'm very open to reading about how they're going to implement new technology, because the last 3 months have been just like, here's some cool web fonts that are popular right now. Here's some other stuff about how to make images really sing on your blogs. Like, it's such good stuff that content marketing is the way to kind of build a relationship with your readers. And if you can do that on the webcomic side, like take all that, you know, web design example and just kind of fold it into how can you cultivate the community around your webcomic. You know, you're not going to have to mention all the time that you've got a new book coming out. You're going to have to make one post. It'll be a news release and say, hey, there's a book coming out in 6 weeks. And then just not have to say it again, because people are going to be coming back all the time because of the other stuff that you're doing, say like your webcomic or the articles that you're making, tutorials that you're doing, whatever. And I think that content marketing is the smarter way to go right now.
Right. I spot on. So there was your 7 deadly sins.
And here's the thing. We've all done them. We all do them occasionally to varying degrees, but it's just kind of, I think, being aware of it.
Right. And, you know, I also, this article brought something else to my mind as well, beyond just webcomics. I guess it's still in the realm of webcomics, but this was 2007. And then this person stopped doing it around 2009. They stopped doing the reviews. And then, but there was such a following for these people that someone started a wiki by a similar name. And that ran pretty strong until 2012. And then it kind of imploded upon itself because after a while, they ran out of big names, and it's good to pick on people who are having success. It's bad to pick on people who are not having success, because then it seems like it's just bullying, right?
Hmm.
Excuse me while I blow my nose. But yeah, so it's like bullying at that point. If you know, if you're attacking a web cartoonist that has 50 followers, and you're going, your stuff sucks. And it's like, well, yeah, well, I got 50 followers. I just started. Leave me alone, you big jerk. But you know, do we need that kind of counterbalance, a critical review of web comics like other
media? I think
mediums?
We always need critiques, right. But there's a difference between a critique and just trying to tear someone up.
I can't remember the exact quote, but it's basically, if you're giving a critique that wasn't asked for, then it's not a critique.
Yeah, right.
Right? It's very different. If an artist posts their webcomic and says, I struggled with the hands in this comic, anybody that's really good at drawing hands, like, tell me, how can I improve?
Right.
That's different than them posting it, trying their best, realizing that they need to work, but not mentioning it, and then everybody popping in and ripping them for drawing poorly drawn hands. Like, it's a whole different mentality. Like, the artist is then open and looking for the criticism as opposed to not. And they do it. I don't remember exactly the system because I've not actually partaken in critiques on DeviantArt. But there's a button, I think, when you make a post on DeviantArt where you can say, yes, I'm open to critiques on this. Like, this is a work in progress, or this is something where I didn't feel like I was successful. I want people to tell me how to improve, right? Yeah. But in that situation, because of the nature of the site, I mean, I'm sure there are examples where people have gone off the rails, but a lot of the comments on those particular posts are of people saying like, oh, well, I can see where you've got this really cool lighting coming in from the top, but where it's falling flat for me is this spot in the bottom where I lose all the detail, or blah, blah, blah. You should put something here. And they get, you know, they tend to get technical about like how the painting's going and stuff. But I think that that's the huge difference, is that there's always room for critique, but it has to be in an environment where it's invited.
Right. Interesting. Unlike films, where no one asked you, but you go in and you review Deadpool anyway and go like, Deadpool's super awesome. And so, you know, I'm just saying. Super
yeah.
Awesome.
I mean, it's different too, though. I mean, like, there's a whole industry where you're putting it out there with the expectation that people are going to critique it. Right.
Right.
No one makes a movie, especially a superhero movie in Hollywood, and expects no one to critique it. Like, that's an expectation going in.
Right. So big web comics, should they expect criticism, critiques?
Well, I think, just by virtue of having so many eyeballs on them, there's bound to be some loud mouths in the group.
Yeah, I mean, if they're that big, I mean, if you're talking about big web comics, if they're that big, they've already got critiques. They've been used to it. Like, right. their expectation
still hurts,
is that,
right? Still hurts.
Well, yeah, but at some point you have to not read the comments, right?
Right, totally. Guys, I had fun talking about the 7 deadly sins. Thank you, Matt, for bringing up this topic. Thank you to the author, whoever you may be, of the 2007 blog. We have a link to that. Thank you for your venom and your anger. It was much entertainment out in almost 9 years now later? 9 years, yeah. Very good stuff. Matt, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Where can people follow you?
Best place to find my work is go to YouTube and do a search for Matt Wad.
Excellent. Joel Duggan.
You can find me on Twitter at Joel Duggan. You can read my Starcrossed comic at starcrossedonline.com. New one will be up on Monday. And for my portfolio, just go to joelduggan.com.
Excellent. BrianDunaway.com. Follow everything we do on comicscoasttocoast.com. We are moving to a new hosting provider. Hopefully things will be faster. Also, while I'm moving stuff around, I thought I would go back through some of our higher bit rate shows and maybe make them a little bit smaller in size so that they're easier to download for you. I don't know. Does that really even matter to people anymore? 128-bit stereo, isn't that enough for a podcast, Joel?
I would say so.
I would say so, too. So why do I have something that at like 196, almost 100 megabyte file size? Why?
I don't know. Where would you think that falls? Is that gluttony, Matt?
Maybe a little bit gluttony. I'm like, screw you, people. I got lots of bandwidth. Screw you. Deal with it. All right, that's it for this week. We'll see you guys next week on Comics Coast to Coast.
Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Better than you, Jill Duggan.